Welcome to Staging Business Behind the Scenes. I'm your host, Janet Davis. I'm also a trained musician, actor, and dancer. But most importantly for our conversation, I'm a seasoned expert in nonprofit administration with a specialty in working with leadership teams and boards at arts and cultural organizations. My mission is to make sure that the artists of our time have everything they need to make our hearts beat faster, bring us peace, help us find something in common with someone else, thrill us with athleticism and talent, or tell a story that needs to be told in a way that all of us can understand. I've learned over the years that the tricky business of creativity is often underplanned, underdeveloped, and underled. And if we don't do anything about it, the theaters, orchestras, museums, art halls, and dance companies that are telling the stories of our communities will not survive. We're here to help the administrators, the leaders behind the scenes, the managing directors, financial directors, development directors, facilities teams, and marketers. We will pull back the curtain on a topic important to our listeners. Whether you are a member of the leadership team, a board member, or a staff member, our objective is to help you have your best ideas yet as we shine a spotlight on various challenges and opportunities of arts management. Strategy, operational planning, earned and contributed income, technology, and facilities, to name a few. I'm Janet Davis, and this is Staging Business Behind the Scenes. Join me as we master the business of creativity. Wyatt Davis, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Janet. Glad to be here.
It's really fun to have this conversation.
I'm looking forward to it.
So, I think you know that we're doing a podcast about staging business behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And that we are focused on helping arts administrators and arts managers do a great job for their artists. Strategic planning is hard.
So can we say overall that most people don't like to do planning or strategic planning in general?
Why do you think?
I don't know, but I think, well, it's kind of common to hear things like, you know, the first casualty of battle is the plan, or we did a strategic plan. This is the classic. We did a strategic plan, and at least back in the day, it's in a three-ring binder and it sits on the shelf, right? I guess now it sits in a virtual, it sits in a folder
on a server,
a cloud server somewhere, and is forgotten forever, right? But that's sort of the oh yeah, strategic planning, no, you know, it's not very useful, it's very time consuming, it's frustrating, etc.
Why do you think people feel that way?
Because I think that's probably the normal process, at least in the, from what I've seen in the nonprofit world, right? That seems to be a pretty common process. And, you know, I guess one notion here is that in the nonprofit world, it's pretty standard that when you go talk to a funder, go talk to a foundation, whatever, one of the basic check boxes is bring your strategic plan. And so there's sort of this notion of, okay, so we'll do a strategic plan, and we do one every 5 years or, you know, whatever it is. And so it becomes this very rote kind of, here we go again. And I think for whatever reason, most people do think that, okay, we did that and it was frustrating and wasn't that valuable.
How much of the angst associated with planning do you think goes to what it takes to actually implement the plan in the context of, okay, but I've already got all these other things to do in my day-to-day?
I think that could be a part of it. And so maybe define terms here. I often talk about strategic planning and business planning. And then I think there's the whole world of implementation and keeping a plan alive over time, for lack of a better term. But again, probably not universal, but often in the nonprofit world anyway, certainly arts would be a vertical. You know, strategic planning is maybe Saturday morning with the board and flip charts, right? It's like, okay, we get together and there's a blank piece of paper and what do we want to do? And we come up with kind of three goals and the truth, right? And that in and of itself, we might just call getting together and visioning. There's nothing wrong with that. But do strategic planning, right? I think there's the notion of creating a fact base around some essential questions. What are we trying to answer about our future? Not just, hey, what should our future be, right? But can we focus it in a little bit? And if we can get clarity on what those questions are that everyone agrees, these are big, right? We really need to kind of come around these questions as a group of leaders and think about our future in that context. Then we can at least take a run at what information would help inform the discussion and the answer to those questions. And so I think that's sort of step one, is can we take it from this rote, expected, kind of shallow process to, is it a process that really goes at things that we feel are vitally important? You know, everybody sees this as leaders. Can we coalesce what those questions are, bring them into focus, and then let's get some data. You know, let's get outside of our four walls or outside of our, you know, kind of our team and think about other organizations, the industry, the audience, you know, all the factors that go into producing this art or, you know, or for this organization to succeed. I think that's sort of one step to say, can we go from rote exercise to something that could be valuable? And that's in the broad planning context. But then I think you do maybe break it down and say, well, we've got strategic planning and we can dig into, so, you know, what are the terms, you know, and how would we talk, what would we describe strategic planning to be versus business planning, which says, okay, that's great, but how would we do that? Right. And then to just the ongoing, can this be a living process that's going to, you know, encounter reality, encounter, you know, the future that's not yet known. And what do we do, you know, when we hit potholes, you know, things don't go as planned, you know, the world changes in ways that no one could have anticipated, whatever.
There are major pandemics.
For sure. Yeah. How do we respond to that? So I think all of those things maybe go into how does this go from being, oh, my God, you know, like, could we please not do that on strategic planning to maybe this is a generative process that yields some value?
When you advise folks as you begin to work with them, how do you suggest they prepare for a successful outcome in the planning process? Do you encourage them to do personal research? How do you prepare the board versus the leadership team? What do you tell people to expect in terms of the time that it takes? Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that.
So maybe let's go people and process and data, right? And are the right people engaged? Do we have a good process, you know, that doesn't short circuit it, but also doesn't lead to, we've been doing this strategic plan for 12 months, right? Or 18 months, which sounds kind of crazy, but actually happens. What information? You know, do we need to do a good job of planning? So I think maybe, you know, thinking of those areas. If you think about what I'll call the structure of a strategic plan, you know, you and I often talk about, you know, it's the why, what, and the how, which I think is a really accessible way to think about, you know, planning. It's like, you know, the why goes to the organization and, you know, its mission, its vision. I think personally, not just values, but its beliefs. And I think there's a difference. But those things all come together, if done well, to say at any moment, you know, we could say, this is why this organization exists. It seeks to do this thing, imagines this future result and a vision, and it's bound together by, you know, beliefs and values, you know, the why people would come together to do this work and what's important about it.
Could I interrupt you there and ask a probing question? Tell me about when you have worked for organizations that the why is not as tactile, it's not as forward as feeding someone or housing someone, when it's a little more harder to define in terms of the impact. How do you go about facilitating that conversation so that it's relevant, but we turn a feeling into something that is measurable?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, right? And maybe even just broadly in the nonprofit sector, right? I mean, there are all of these different verticals and organizations and missions, and many of them are subjective, right? I mean, we're not setting out to produce a widget, you know. We're setting out to create a service or provide an experience, and often, not always, but often, the nonprofit sector is filling in the gaps, right? Out there in this entire, you know, space of the economy where, well, you know, there are places where there's not a clear for-profit motive and it's infinitely scalable and hugely profitable and capital pours into it and here we go, right? But these are the things that make life, you know, wonderful or beautiful, right? That you have to work harder. It's like, so what is this compelling thing here that causes people to still want to come together, work together, seek and apply investment, you know, draw in, you know, patrons, whatever it may be, right? So I think that's just sort of the first thing. But going back to your question, I think actually values and beliefs are a really interesting way to take a mission and pull it out into, you know, something that's a little bit more tactile, like you're saying, that's like, okay, you know, how do we all come around this together? I think everybody probably knows what values are. They seem pretty common. Let's put it that way. Okay, when we do our strategic plan, we're going to talk about our values. And I don't mean to sound facetious, critical,
pejorative, pedantic,
but here it comes. It's like, okay. And so we work on our values and we pretty quickly come up with mom and apple pie. It's like, we value integrity. Well, good. Good. That's great. Right. Sure. And fine. Right. That's fine. So I think values are great. And they, you know, it is generative because it brings people who care to work on this mission together to talk about who are we, right? You know, what do we expect of one another? How do we want to treat people in the world? That's all great. So values, right? I really like, and I'm, you know me, I'm not a soft side person, but when it goes to taking a mission and trying to make it more tactile, like you said, and kind of operationalize it or put it into the world, and put it into the world in a way that is this organization's mission, right? Not, oh, here are 10 arts organizations or 10 social service organizations, and they all basically have the same mission, right? So, well, how do we differentiate that a little bit? And I think beliefs actually does, you know, draw that out of the leadership group or the participants that are in this process, because it's about, okay, but what do we think is right in the world? Right. So it's like, you know, our value is integrity. Yes. Great. But what do we believe about this mission in the world and what we're trying to do? And, you know, now we get into things about how we want to change the world. We believe that this is the way things should be. Right. Or we believe a certain part of the economy or whatever works this way. Right. We're going to attack the mission this way. And maybe said differently, when you do a good job of beliefs in the context of the mission, you should see them show up in the way you operationalize your ultimate result.
Can you give me an example?
Planning and business planning. Yeah. So thinking about immigration, not arts, but you know, there's a lot when you do that kind of work with leaders that are working in the immigration space in the United States. You pretty quickly get to things about, you know, the inherent goodness of immigrants, of their importance to, you know, our communities, right, and to our culture. You get to statements about how we actually are very similar, right? Like, in fact, you know, people who choose to try to come to a different country are courageous and envision, you know, for their family, everything that we envision, security and belongingness and, you know, all those things, right? When you get into that conversation, you animate, right? You start to get into this space that says, all right, this is the why, you know, this is because we believe these things really passionately. And hey, do we have integrity, you know, and are we, you know, sure, right? But when you get into that conversation, you start to get into a place to say, okay, this is really how we want to see, you know, what we want, the change we want to see in the world, right? We want to reach out and have this mission come to life in these ways. And it starts to beg the question, okay, so if we think all this is true, how do we put it into practice? So I don't know if that answers the question well, but that comes to mind.
It does. It resonates deeply. I was working with the theater and doing some strategic planning, and we struggled because the conversation and the participants in the meeting were so focused on the outcome mm-hmm. of the work mm-hmm. that they were losing sight of how they as humans could impact the lives of other humans. And it became judgmental. And we laughed because at one point I stopped the conversation and they kept articulating their mission as, well, you know, as a contemporary theater, you know, it's our job and we have to create a space where, you know, there can be dialogue and where people can change minds and, you know, right. we can reflect the community. And I just stopped the conversation and I said, okay, just for a minute, I'm going to tell you that your mission cannot be you suck and we're going to fix you, right? Yeah. I mean, that can come across, I think. I think in many arts and cultural organizations, yes, the desire, the values, we value equity and inclusion. We value a community where people understand each other's stories and they can see the inherent beauty and goodness in each other. And so, but the mission of the organization is not to tell people that they need to see the beauty in one another. It's to create a space in which they have the opportunity to learn about other people and so they can see the beauty in other people.
So let's say this. And let's kind of stick with this why, what, and how idea. So we've talked about the why and its mission and vision and values and beliefs. And it can be very subjective, very soft-sided, and after a while, really frustrating. You know, I guess you could probably picture, I know I've been in them, strategic planning processes that get into this long, philosophical, esoteric, you know, squishy conversation about what we're calling the why. And don't go beyond that. And it's like, what was that all about, right? So anyway, you know, that's why. But if we kind of come on down a level, three-layer cake here, and we think about, you know, but what are we trying to achieve? And this is true of the why as well. And we get to the what. It's not a list of your programs. It's results, right? It's like, what are the impacts in the world, right, that this organization is trying to achieve? And I think when you get into that, now you start to say, well, how would we know? And you get to things like dashboards and measures to say, can we have a balanced set of measures that describes the future, you know, for this organization in the imagination of the leadership that speaks to how we're going to serve audiences or communities, right? And how we're going to engage stakeholders, right? And how we're going to strengthen our organization. And in some cases, how we're going to advocate for structural change and policy, whatever it may be, right? But can we start to take that why that can be, you know, kind of out there and just put it in plain English as a first step? So working on the what in the context of the why helps this become more concrete, right? Then you have the whole how, which is that is strategy. So far, why and what are just laying out, just help us define who we are, what we think and feel, and what we're trying to achieve in plain English. But just doing that, not getting into, I have a dashboard of 27 metrics, you know, just getting the plain English expression of what we're trying to achieve in the context of the mission can be really focusing. I think you have to realize that, right back to the idea, in a lot of ways, this is no different than for-profit. It's just not, right? In the sense that if you're going to be successful, and I'll just make some assumptions, you're going to have some reasonable scale. You're going to be able to demonstrate some impact. You're going to be a great place to work. You're going to be an institution that has, you know, patrons that people choose to participate with, whatever, right? There has to be quality. You can't deliver that, right, without the people and the capital and the brand and the marketing and all these things, right? And so in a lot of ways, in the for-profit world, right, you know, the brands and the things that you know and love and that are ubiquitous, et cetera, and even the micros, whatever, they deliver, right? And so the passion brings all those things together, and they can't suck, right? The stuff that sucks goes away, right? And the stuff that's good thrives. Nonprofits aren't for-profit organizations that can come up with a great idea and, hey, we go pitch it and we generate venture capital and, you know, here we go, right? We need philanthropic capital and we need to attract people. We need, you know, human capital, all that, right? So we have to codify it.
Something that you said just triggered an interesting thought for me, which is it feels like when two friends graduate from business school and they have had an idea in entrepreneurship 101 mm-hmm. that they take and they're going to like, we're going to make our fortune here. We're going to do this and we're going to produce this, you know, computer project or this system or whatever it is, this product,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And they get super excited and they are clear-eyed about the fact that if it doesn't work, it won't work. They know that there are risks involved and that if everything doesn't hit on all cylinders, then it's over, game over.
Right.
And I feel like in the nonprofit space, if it doesn't hit on all cylinders, there's all this kind of like, there's this indignation. If a nonprofit is having a hard time or is suffering, people try to save it. You know, they don't look and say, hey, it didn't work. Right.
I think I know from personal experience that on the for-profit side, the same thing can happen. When you have a dream, right, and you're going after something, it's hard to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
But
I guess my point is that a nonprofit organization in any industry vertical needs all the things you outlined, capital, talent, customers, all those things. It cannot survive on a founder and their dream alone, right?
So let's say it can't thrive. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you probably find, and you know, this is maybe one of the great things about, you know, the nonprofit space versus for-profit. You know, volunteers do a tremendous amount of good, right? And maybe I'm wrong about this, but I'm trying to think in the for-profit world about big successful organizations that are driven by volunteers.
No, maybe. That's called sweat equity. That's people who are earning, sure. earning right? They're right. earning shares in the
right.
company.
Right. But I mean, you know, any of us from right where we sit, at least in the United States, right, in the communities where we live, the nonprofit sector, in many cases, right, flies below the scenes. It's not the big branded national, franchise nonprofits. It's small community organizations and volunteers that just exist, right? And that passionate thing without a tremendous amount of structure or capital, whatever, it's kind of like, I won't remember the word, it's like mushrooms and, you know, the network beneath the mushrooms, right? It's like, it just exists and it holds things together, right? So that's true and that's good and that's fine. But that's not what everybody sets out to do, right? So if you set out to say, well, I want to create something that is sustainable and will have a big impact, will transcend its founders, right? Well, et cetera, then I think you've got to lean more deeply into, okay, but we got to get pretty clear and more formal about what are we trying to accomplish and why. and, you know, set ourselves some markers. Mm-hmm. Say, okay, if we're going to move and do this, we have to advance. Mm-hmm. I guess I do believe that. That's kind of old school. But if you're not growing, are you dying? I kind of think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you're not regenerating, a lot of mushroom stuff here. but, you know, that I think that's important. So to me, that would be one of the reasons why, you know, if I'm a group that's coming together because of a passionate mission, not to, you know, make widgets, whatever, I still need to, if I want this to be something that really makes a big impact over time, I kind of need to lean into it to say, are we going to take this to another level or not? Yeah, are we going to be just fine and just let it be quasi, you know, kind of volunteer driven, whatever, and just, you know, let it go.
To back up your point that says the conversations about why are we doing this and what are we doing need to be revisited, right? And I think to your point about if you're not changing and growing, then what's happening? Because if you're not paying attention to what's happening in the market, and you are an organization that says, well, we've always done these plays or these exhibitions, or we've always treated our audiences this way, and we think this is what they want. Unless you talk to them and understand what's happening in the market, you invariably will misstep.
So if we think about this idea of agility, right? Why, what? And we haven't really talked about the how, but let's just say, how is execution more business planning than it is strategic planning? I think there are pieces of this, like the mission and the vision and values and beliefs, that hopefully have a pretty good shelf life.
So let's talk about this how for a minute.
Yeah.
If we might. You know, this is where I think, talk to me about who's involved at the various levels of each of these, right?
Yeah.
Who's at the table? How do you even determine?
This is a tough one. Yeah. So this is a tough one.
Right.
Because I'm tempted to say, okay, you know, the why. Well, in a way, you know, so boards of directors exist to transcend chief executives and executive directors and managing directors and artistic directors. They're there to be the glue in the long term, right? So you might be tempted to say, well, of course, they own the mission and the vision, but do they own the values and beliefs, right? And I tend to think, well, yeah, actually, they kind of do own the mission and vision in the long term. And they themselves change, right? But it's like,
do you think they're like the protectors of the realm?
They have keys to kingdom in those senses, right? But then you get to values and beliefs. Well, what about the staff? What about our customers, you know, that choose to patron this organization, whatever it may be, right? It's like, doesn't everybody sort of need to be brought together by those ideas, right? So when we talk about the what, I think there are pieces where the board owns it, and the board evolves itself, but it certainly transcends executive directors, CEOs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? But when we get to values and beliefs, if the employees don't feel it and the volunteers don't feel it or share it, or even the customers, clients, you know, patrons, whomever don't feel it and share it, we're missing something.
I think this is exceptionally true in talking about arts and cultural organizations, because your audiences choose you and they have choice.
Yeah.
They have options.
Yeah. So, I mean, if that's kind of who does what on the why, then you get to the what, the results. And maybe this is old school, but I think it's true, right? The board of directors hires, supports, evaluates, and maybe fires the executive director, you know, managing director, artistic director, whatever it may be. And so the agreement about what we're trying to get done here in the context of the mission and vision is a big deal. And in a lot of ways, that's sort of the employment contract with the chief executive. And so I think that is the providence of the board and that executive to hammer it out. And then we get to the how, right? And so if the what, in my opinion, becomes more powerful when we put markers out there, say how much and by when, just that simple exercise, then, you know, the how gets much more specific. It's like, these are the ways then to accomplish these results in this time frame, and here we go. But you brought up the term, you know, agility. I'll go all the way back to one of your original questions. What's bad about strategic planning? Well, no one knows the future, right? There are no crystal balls, right? But planning is about trying to look over the horizon and say, you know, this is what we're trying to do and how we're trying to get there and therefore the steps we're going to take, etc. And so how do you have good planning but still have agility and adaptability, right? And so there, I think it's really important to say planning is not a moment, but it's a process. And it does have particular times when we're going to do more to kind of refresh and rethink and kind of put new markers out there and question strategies and all that. But once that's done, it continues, right? And it continues through, I think, back up to the what and the notion of dashboards to just ask the simple question, are we achieving what we set out to achieve, right? And if we aren't, why? What's happening, right? And is it because, well, the world changed and there was a global pandemic and everything's upended, whatever. Or is our execution really crappy? We're just not getting the rubber to the road here? Or, hey, it was an interesting idea on this strategy. It didn't work. We did a great job of implementing it, and it didn't turn out like we thought it would, right?
How often does that happen in your world?
Very often. Very often. You know, no one has crystal balls, right? No one has perfect foresight, and everything's dynamic, right? I mean, others in the market can see what you're doing and pivot and say, okay, well, they're doing that. We'll do this. And if you're in more of a B2C model where we're selling tickets or, you know, experiences, customers have choice. It's like, well, this looked great yesterday, but hey, wait, this organization over here just took that and turned it this way. It's like, that looks better, so maybe I'll go do that.
Or maybe they say to themselves, you know, we have a family budget of $1,200 a year for entertainment.
Yeah.
And oops, here comes Taylor Swift. We're going to blow the whole year's budget on one event.
Tragedy.
Right? So they, not necessarily.
Go ahead, yes.
Speak for yourself. But they, you know, they make a decision that then prevents them from going to their local theater to hear the local concerts because they've made a choice of how to spend their discretionary income.
So can we just say that the world is constantly and infinitely changing, right? It's like, and so back to the question. All right, if that's true, why in the hell do a strategic plan? I mean, come on, right? It's like, if this is all changing all the time, why are we doing this? We're wasting our time.
That's a great question. Tell me. Enlighten me.
I was hoping you knew the answer. No. because, you know, and I'm going to compare this to still like the stock market or any market for private capital. If you show up to a group of potential investors and say, we're not really sure about the plan, but we're so agile, we'll just start working and great things will happen. So how about 10 million bucks? You're not going to get 10 million bucks. And these days, I think increasingly, like, you know, if software is eating the world, go into software, right? If you show up and say, I've got a plan that I printed out. Why would I do that? But I did it. I printed it out and it's 3 feet thick. It's got 27,000 steps and it's 5 years long. You're not going to get any money because everybody knows the plan's wrong, right? There's no way, right? So I think it's this finding the middle way where we've got enough of a framing. And I'm going to go back to why, and how, right? Simple model that's not meant to be static. It's meant to be, you know, to move over time, but just gets real clarity for leaders around who are we and why do we think the way we think and, you know, what is the greatness in the world that we imagine, you know, that brings us all together and what are we trying to accomplish in a reasonable time frame, right? And if you say by 30 years from now, well, if you're economic development for a country, that might be relevant, right? If you're an arts organization, that might be, you know, the next 3 to 4 years, 5 years, right? But whatever that relevant time frame is that galvanizes everyone, that gets us out of the vision space. BHAGs are wonderful, 10-year visions are powerful, great, sure. But, you know, if we're really going to line up and go here after important results, and we need enough time to put the rubber to the road and let things bake, there's a time frame out there. But we know in that time frame, so much can happen that would say, well, all of our great ideas needed to be modified, right? And if we say, well, we're going to update this plan every 3 to 5 years, it's done. Does not work, right? Goes on the shelf. That's that. And so I think there's some process by which the governors, the governance, the board, the executives, staff get together, check in. And I think the language is the dashboard in a lot of ways, right? To say, this is what we're trying to achieve. And we have agreed upon strategy, models, approaches, right? That give us our distinctiveness. This is the way we're going to go to market and go after this. But we're constantly testing them. And we're testing them through data, right? And so governors and get to stay in governance, and you know, executives get to stay in the operations and execution space, but we have a common language, right? And we are constantly checking ourselves and testing it to say, are we achieving what we set out to achieve? Said differently, are these strategies effective? Is our execution effective? Is it working? If it's not, what do we need to do? And what I've seen and I like is the notion of saying, look, at any given time, board of directors or funders or customers, whomever, you know, this organization is going to invest. And I guess, well, let's just use an old school term in research and development, R&D, right? But in a context, right? In the context of the mission and our goals. So the why and the what. And it is our objective to be trying new things and to actually resource them, like to carve out some space. People have time, people have budgets, right? But treat it like venture capital, like time box it. It's like, I'm making this up. You put it on a small scale. You've got $15,000 in 90 days, team of staff members, of volunteers, of clients or customers who might, you know, be part of an experiment. And you've got these objectives. You get to go try an idea or ideas. And what do we get out of it? We get learning. We're going to burn the money and the time, right? We get learning, and we hope we find through a lot of experiments like that, a relative few that's like, these could scale. This could work. This is interesting, right? And so but bring it back to the whole strategic planning model, right? The notion that we could all sit down and write a strategic plan and it is perfect, beautiful, right? It's like, that doesn't happen. You know, you do your best thinking, based on the best information you have, and you draw strategy against hopefully compelling goals that serve a mission, right? And we set off. And now everything's kind of on the table. And this idea of agility and evolution and innovation is like where it's at. You know, in my mind anyway, we shouldn't change the mission every 12 months, please, right? We shouldn't have 97 goals and we shouldn't have one, but do we have 4 or 5 or 6 big idea goals that we can describe in plain English? Success looks like this. And can we take it a little bit further and say, we want to have the audacity in a lot of ways to say, we'd like to achieve this much by when, and have a dashboard we could all agree about. And sometimes, you know, that's needs some quantitative pieces to it. There are some qualitative pieces as well. We did or didn't do XYZ, right? But if we can do that, now how we get there gets super dynamic, right? And I think this is why, you know, back to the story of, oh, I've got the strategic plan in a, you know, from 1987 in a 3-ring binder on the shelf, right? And it sucked, right? Well, it probably sucked because of the execution problems, right? And we didn't adapt, we didn't evolve. So I think somewhere then strategic planning is not an event, it's a process, and it's not too different from management. Right at the end of a long day, it's like, are we keeping our eye on what's actually happening, and are we challenging our approaches?
So I know that you are a musician and an artist in many ways. And I know that you smile and you understand the concept of what happens when you're playing live. And I would love to hear you talk about and just draw the metaphor between what it's like to play live, you know, and what that means, right? And how, what happens when you play live? What does that feel like? Because I think there's so much that's relevant for artists as they think about planning and they think, well, I can handle it on stage, right? Like I know what to do.
That's great.
Right.
Yeah.
But tell me about what you think it feels like to be playing live and to have something not go at all what you expected, but what do you do, right? Tell me about that.
You keep on playing.
Yes.
I think anybody that cares about what they do plays live every day, right? You just do. You don't come in and just do your job, right? And you do the same thing every day and it doesn't matter. And I'm not trying to throw stones here, but, you know, if you're paying attention, you've got framework. And yeah, it's a plan. Like, do I know what I'm trying to accomplish? Not just me. Do I know what this organization is trying to accomplish? Do I know what these teams are trying to accomplish, right? Those are sort of our touchstones. You know, our guiding star.
It's the chart.
Yeah.
It's the chord chart.
Yeah. There's the chart. That's the set list, right? Whatever. It's the, you know, what we hope the audience will feel at the end of the performance or throughout the performance. And then, you know, stuff happens, right? Break a string. You totally play the wrong part. Everything goes
off. You skip a verse.
Yeah. Right. All that. And
someone forgets to enter.
Yeah, whatever it may be. But I think the point is, you know, and so you adapt, right? You improvise, you fix it, you move and reform, whatever it may be. But that's what it is. It's dynamic. It's dynamic within a context, though, right? So the strategic planning piece of all this is the context, and it's not static, as we've said, right? It changes over time, and you pay attention to it. But the action is at that strategy and execution level, and the business planning and execution and the learning and innovation and adaptation that you hopefully can have if you know what the hell was you were trying to do in the first place, right? And so I think that's the thing, you know, that I see. And yeah, that would be very much like GarageBand. There we go, right? Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. And for everybody listening, you can meet Wyatt at www.clarksondavis.com and check out his practice, or just reach out to me. I'm happy to put you in touch. But so grateful for your insight and your experience. And I think it's really important for all of us to understand the relationship between planning and execution and resources, regardless of industry vertical. So I'm grateful for your time and look forward to talking to you again soon.
This was fun. Thanks.